out my New Balance shoes, and I have for a long time. And Michael DeCibio, who owns all of the stores, and we talk about Evergreen Walk in South Windsor and the Avon Marketplace at 380 West Main Street, Route 44 in Avon. And Michael is quite a person. He really is. He put this company together, and it's just amazing. And you know another thing, too. He donates. He really works with people. And this is the reason he's successful. Now, as far as the New Balance is concerned, foot, ankle support. That is so important. And I told you about the ambulance worker that called me one morning and said that his ankles, they were always bothering him a little bit. But he heard me talk about New Balance, got a pair, and he said he hasn't had any problems at all. And that's one of the areas, okay? Now, what I like most about the shoe, I love the shoe anyway. They're fabulous shoes. But the toe box, I never thought of a toe box before. And all of a sudden, after a couple of days, you don't even really think you got shoes on. They're so comfortable. And everything is supported. This is what it's all about, and this is why I hope that you'll get an opportunity to get over to Evergreen Walk in South Windsor or the Avon Marketplace. Now, kids, sneakers, you should see the sneakers. Baseball shoes, golf shoes, unique sizes, special custom fits, and this immense inventory. An on-site custom repair and design, on-site. That's right, at Evergreen Walk South Windsor and the Avon Marketplace, 380 West Main Street, Route 44 in Avon. It is New Balance. 24 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock already.
Brad, she's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair, State Senator Heather Summers from Groton, and she's part of the legislature's Public Health Committee and is calling for a legislative hearing, renewing her call for a legislative hearing into alleged abuse at the Whiting Forensic Division, Connecticut's maximum security psychiatric hospital. Senator, good morning and welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Senator, we are fine, but I want to say something to you right up front. I am one of your fans. I think that you have done a tremendous job in the Senate because you are not afraid to let them have it when they've got to have somebody let them have it. I'm telling you.
Well, I was brought up that we need to be accountable for our actions, and especially in this particular case, these folks that are in these facilities are reprimanded to the state's care. And we saw as the warrant or the arrest warrant was unsealed the depravity to which the actions that are videotaped become. I mean, it's even worse than we read in the audit report. It absolutely really demands that the legislature, who is responsible for this, take all consideration, make sure that we shine light on something that has been clearly left in the shadows for way too long, and get to the bottom of this, what I consider a systematic breakdown and a culture of cruelty that can no longer exist, should not have been existing, but clearly is pervasive throughout this facility. And perhaps, you know, this has brought question to mind on the entire Connecticut Valley Hospital system. Because what's to say if it's happening in one facility, it's not happening throughout the others, because this is part of a larger system. So, you know, the public hearing that I would like to establish, we're looking towards the end of October, because I'm a co-chair of public health and one of the other co-chairs is away, is to look at how did we get to this happening. You know, we can't really get into the details of this particular arrest, but we certainly can look to what are the processes, what are the, you know, what is the how does the system work? How did this possibly ever happen? You know, do we have employees, supervising employees? What is the management structure? How is management trained? You know, what's the chain of command for complaints? How can a commissioner not know this is going on? So those are the places that I want to ask questions about. You know, it will be impossible for me to ask specific questions about this case because it's under criminal investigation. But we certainly need to learn what's wrong with the system that we actually even got here. So that's where I want to go with this investigation. And I have experience because I've been on the other side of FDA audits and CMS audits, so I know the questions to ask. So I certainly am going to be using that experience to ask very particular questions of the folks that are involved in managing these facilities.
Senator, another thing, too, what nobody can understand, I've been hit by this out in public. They can't understand these folks that you're talking about. They're still getting paid.
Absolutely.
Yep. A lot of money. They're still getting paid.
Yes, and that's another thing that, you know, you look into. These folks are all protected by the unions. So the union has very specific guidelines within the contract on, you know, what the process is as far as if somebody is obviously if they are arrested or indicted, that they are not guilty until proven so. So therefore, they are continued to be paid. And I know that does not sit well with me. I mean, this is something, and we can't rush to judge, but this is videotape. This is not hearsay. This is something that has been viewed on the videotape. It has been recorded. There's reports of it within the CMS audit report. So I find it absolutely outrageous that somebody cannot understand why they're being arrested.
Now, Senator, I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, and I'm sure you're aware of this, the defense is going to use the argument that the videotape is grainy and is not the best evidence, but we'll let that go for a minute. Are you confident that there's going to be public hearings by the end of the month?
You know, well, I am pushing for the end of the month. You know, I am confident in this. I personally, Heather Summers, as the senator, is going to have a public hearing. If my co-chairs want to join me, that would be terrific, but if they choose not to, as the public health co-chair, any senator can have a public hearing on anything they want, and I am going to have a public hearing concerning what is going on in these facilities. Now, I'm sure that, you know, from what I've been told, you know, Demas is not interested in having a public hearing, which I understand, but I'm not going to be asking them specific questions as, you know, that will, you know, compromise an investigation. I know better. I would not ask those questions. And if by chance I happen to, you know, skirt close to that, they certainly can say, I can't answer that because this is under investigation. I have no intention on asking very specific things that would ever jeopardize any kind of criminal case. That's not my intent. My intent is how did we get to where we are and how does this get fixed? Because it is unacceptable. We are spending millions and millions of taxpayer dollars into a facility that, in my opinion, looking at it, is absolutely systematically broken with a serious void in management, and it has to be fixed. And I want accountability because that's how I was brought up from the ground up. No one gets any passes and excuses. You know, you are in charge of a facility. It is your job as a commissioner or manager or supervisor in a facility that is caring for people that calls itself a hospital. You have a duty and an obligation to do your job, and if you don't, you're going to be held accountable. Enough is enough, and this is outrageous, unacceptable. This is not the Dark Ages, although it appears that this facility has been in the dark and the shadows for way too long, and it's time that I am committed to shining light on it and getting to the bottom of it so this never happens again.
Well, Senator, you know and I know, if any elected official out there or bureaucrat out there says you shouldn't have a public hearing because of the criminal investigation, that's nothing more than a smokescreen. The United States Congress has hearings all the time into situations that are under criminal investigation.
And you know something else? Investigative reporting, okay? Investigative reporting. That
absolutely
has to be done. And you know something, this whole thing about being paid, I mean, it's almost like our leadership does not believe this is going on. However, it is going on, and we know it's going on.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, one of the things that is very difficult coming from that industry, although albeit on the other side, you know, there are so many workers at this facility that are doing a great job. And this whole, you know, criminal case and this whole investigation has tainted their ability, in my opinion, to, you know, be proud of the work that they're doing. Clearly not everybody is involved in this, but it's certainly way too many. When you have nearly 48 people walked out of a facility, that to me sends a message that this is a cultural, systematic breakdown, and that it has to really kind of be burnt to the ground and it has to start over.
Senator, is there a reluctance? Don't mean to interrupt, but we only have so much time. Is there a reluctance on the part of certain people in government not to have public hearings because it might reflect badly on the administration?
You know, I can't say to that specifically. I can tell you that there was a meeting yesterday that DEMAS had at the facility that the co-chair of public health were invited at the last minute. I could not attend because I was previously, you know, tied up and there was just no way I could cancel. Actually, at another hospital, by the way, for breast cancer. My aide went. And it was clear, you know, that they would prefer to not have a public hearing because, you know, they were concerned about the criminal aspect of it. But again, I have to reach out to the commissioner. She has reached out to me. I have not had an opportunity to speak with her directly. I have just been tied up with budget, et cetera. But to let her know that this is not going to be specifically asking questions that would jeopardize a criminal investigation. This is more on, you know, how did we get here? What are the processes in place that we have? What are the procedures like? I want evidence of things like documentation on training. I'm going to be asking for specific job descriptions, and I will be asking her in writing, hopefully the beginning of next week, of all the documents that I would like to see. Because being in that industry, looking at those can help us determine how this happened. And I can tell you that every day that goes by, more and more people reach out to me that have either worked there, that are currently working there, that have a family member there with, I don't want to say story because that's not a correct word, with information on what to look at, where to look, situations that have happened. I've actually received letters that are on DEMAS letterhead that are anonymous because there's fear of retribution. So this goes much further than just this, you know, this arrest that has been made. And I think it is our duty as legislators to get to the bottom of this. Again, this is millions of taxpayer dollars. These people are reprimanded to our care, regardless of what your history is. And they're not just criminals that are there. There are other people that are suffering from mental illness. We have the duty to make sure that these people are cared for in a safe environment. And when you have state employees, state union employees, behaving in the way that we have seen or we have read about based on videotaped evidence and evidence that is in writing from CMS, it is just outrageous on every level that, number one, they're still being paid, that, number two, I have not heard anything from the union stepping up to help rectify the situation, and that, three, the massive amounts of overtime. These are state employees, some of them making $200,000 a year to basically torment patients.
Unbelievable.
You know, this is something like, I keep saying, out of like a horror novel.
Yeah.
You know, it is absolutely unacceptable. And I feel very strongly, probably because I spent my career healing people and helping them. If you go into nursing, you go into it for the love of caring for people, and the fact that these people are, you know, in our care, and we have dropped the ball.
Senator, I don't mean to cut you off, but we have a traffic update. Can you hold?
Can you hold for just a minute? Okay.
Okay, thanks.
All right, 12 minutes now before the hour of 8 o'clock in the morning. Time to check it out, see how the bumper-to-bumper crowd is doing. And Janelle Crispin Allset. Janelle, how's it look right now?
Well, Brad, we have some major problems on 91 southbound to exit 24 in Rocky Hill. There's a crash there. Two-car crack-up. Two left lanes are closed, and expect some heavy-duty delays into that area. Now, 84 is slow westbound. Exit 56 down to 51 with lots of extra company there. And then we have eastbound slowdowns between exits 40 up to 51. At Route 2 westbound, that's very slow. Exit 5 all the way down to exit 2. This report brought to you by the Extradent Temporal Scanner Thermometer. When buying a thermometer, trust over 50 published studies supporting the accuracy of the Extradent Temporal Scanner Thermometer. Pick one up at your local club warehouse or their fine retailers today. I'm Chanel Crispin back at 8:07 with your next traffic check on the Talk of Connecticut.
And it is 7:49, 11 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock in the morning. Daniel, this is something that is happening, and I tell you, I got a story that was similar, and there was a place called Belchertown up in Massachusetts, and we did an investigative report when we were with Channel 3 with John Sablon, and people were complaining. Well, they shut the place down. They shut the place down.
They actually had a little bit on that last night on Channel 3, believe it or not, as they're celebrating the 60th anniversary. They show just a quick clip of you and John. Brad Rynova coming up on Your Money Now. Senator Summers has graciously agreed to stay with us to the top of the hour.
Tremendous. We'll be right back.
I'm Jennifer Kishinka with Your Money Now. The Trump administration's chief trade negotiator plans to propose significant changes to a central aspect of NAFTA in a bill to force auto factories in Mexico to move back to the U.S. The Wall Street Journal reports the proposal introduces a requirement that cars would need to have a specific level of U.S.-made content to qualify for tariff breaks, a step that would change a core principle of the 23-year-old regional trade pact and pit the longtime trade members against each other. Despite President Trump's campaign to drain the swamp of lobbyists and special interests, Washington's influence industry is alive and well and growing. An analysis by Public Citizen, a public interest group, finds that former members of the Trump transition team, his presidential campaign, and the administration, as well as friends, have set up shop as lobbyists and cashed in on connections. Crude oil trading at $50.26 a barrel on Wall Street. Futures are mixed. That's Your Money Now.
And it's 7:51, 9 minutes before 8 o'clock in the morning. You know, I've got to say to all of you, you folks who have talked to my friends at CCS Insurance, I am so happy that you have discovered something that I did not know about until I met the two young men that started this company. What am I talking about? Auto and home insurance. And gone are the days when you had to buy insurance directly from one carrier. And these young men got together, started a company, and thanks to them, and they are just incredible, they love what they do and they know what they're doing. What am I talking about? Well, let's say that you have insurance and you want to find out when you go to another company, you want to say, well, what do I pay? You know what they do? The quotes with you. They help you. And the best ones are based on coverage and cost and save you money. The process of getting multiple quotes has never been so easy. And again, I didn't mention it, but you get those for free, the quotes. And the good people at CCS Insurance even go one step further. Once you're a customer, listen to this carefully, they will reshop your policy at every renewal to make sure that you're still getting the lowest rates. This is what they did. This is how they started their business. And they're so successful. And so many of you have called them. They deliver that new customer feeling again and again. CCS Insurance, their telephone number, 860-321-2422. 860-321-2422. Give them a call.
The talk of Connecticut's and American Senior Benefits Luncheon Series returns. Join Brad Davis and Dan Lavallo Tuesday, October 10th from 11 to 2 at Farmington Gardens. With flu season and the enrollment period of Medicare upon us, Brad and Dan will have an expert health panel to help guide you through the ins and outs of enrolling yourself or a loved one into Medicare. Plus, the Healthy Choices Fast Vax mobile unit built by Hunter's Ambulance will be on site administering flu block flu shots covered by your insurance and administered by Hartford Healthcare at Home nurses. Open to the public, just bring your insurance card and ID. Tickets just $30, includes a delicious three-course lunch. Call 860-768-8550 to purchase your tickets. That's 860-768-8550. The Talk of Connecticut's and American Senior Benefits Luncheon Series with Brad Davis and Dan Lavallo, Tuesday, October 10th at Farmington Gardens, 999 Farmington Avenue in Farmington. More information at talkofconnecticut.com.
Attention investors, protect your IRA or 401k by storing your retirement at home with an Augusta Home Delivery Gold IRA. Call Augusta today at 888-852-4788 for a free guide on transferring a portion of your IRA or 401k into approved physical gold and silver coins and store them in your safe at home or at your local bank. Call 888-852-4788 today and discover how you can get up to $2,000 in silver free. Call 888-852-4788. That's 888-852-4788.
And Senator Heather Summers making another appearance on our program, and she has done an incredible job. This Whiting forensic situation is out of sight. Something's got to happen.
So, Senator, just to be clear, one way or another, you're going to have public hearings on this, correct?
That's correct.
Have you
one way or another? One way or another.
Can you give us a timetable?
I'm looking towards the end of October. I'm going to try to meet next week to try to nail down the scope of the public hearing and try to set a date. So I can follow up with you at that point.
Okay. Now, while we have you here, we all know what happened this week with the budget, and now the legislature, it's back to square one, it would seem. What's your take on the budget situation?
Well, I want to be clear because there's a lot of misinformation. I actually was just looking at an email that I got from a constituent. The way the process works is, you know, the Speaker, Joe Arisimowitz, was in a rush to try to push for an override. So every day that goes by that we don't have a budget, more and more Democrats are coming over to the fact that we have passed a bipartisan budget that the governor decided to veto. So every day that goes along, with the pressure of the towns and cities now suffering because they are not getting their funding, Democrats are coming over to the fact that, yes, an override is a good idea. But Mr. Arisimowitz decided that he wanted to rush, obviously, this override movement because he doesn't want to lose his vote. So we go into session, or the House goes into session, and many of the Democrats that supported this budget are not there that day, surprisingly. So we know we don't have the numbers to override. But what Mr. Arisimowitz did not realize is, because he doesn't understand the rules, because they've never really had to use them, is someone on the prevailing side needs to make the motion. I've heard, oh, well, we follow Robert's rules, but we actually don't. We follow Mason's rules, which means if you were someone who voted for the budget, you would have to have someone who voted for the budget make the motion to override the veto. If you voted against the budget, you can't make that motion. So clearly, no Republicans were going to make a motion to override when you don't have the numbers to do it. This was Arisimowitz calling everybody in because he said we were going to vote on it this day, and the Republicans refused to make the motion. Therefore, it's not that it failed. It just never happened.
So that means, does that mean this budget is still alive then? They could still vote on overriding it?
This budget, I would put it, is alive but on life support.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, quite frankly, I hope everyone that's
this is crazy
understands that this budget, in the governor's own words, 90% is good. So why on earth are we allowing towns and cities and children and boards of ed to suffer when this governor himself says it's 90% good? It passed in a bipartisan way. Allow the budget to go through and amend what you don't like. You have the numbers. fix the 10%. It is just completely irresponsible for this governor, number one, to have vetoed it, but number two, to not be doing anything to move this forward. You know, this is just outrageous. I think the Democrats are reeling from the fact that actually people supported a GOP budget. I don't look at it as a GOP budget.
Senator,
I don't mean
to cut you short. We got a minute left. Quickly, two questions. Number one, are you saying then, despite that House session on Monday, that this budget is still alive, that because they didn't bring up a vote, it means that they could still bring up a vote? Still alive. Okay.
It has a heartbeat.
Okay, that's good. The other thing is...
It has a heartbeat.
Do you believe the governor when he says, as he said yesterday, thousands of jobs would come to Connecticut, but they're holding up because we don't have a budget? Do you believe that statement?
I will tell you that the governor has lost all credibility, as far as I'm concerned, with what he says.
Okay.
This is also the governor who said he would never raise taxes, and we had two of the largest tax increases in Connecticut history.
Senator, thank you so much, you'll be back.
Thanks, Senator.
Okay, thanks. Take care.
Thanks a million. Yep. Thanks a million. Boy, I want to tell you something, Dan. I can't remember when it's been like this before.
It's wild.
I cannot remember, honest to God, and they should be ashamed of themselves putting all of us through this.
Yeah.
Ashamed of themselves. 8 o'clock in the morning, we'll be back.